that's where we leave BBC Radio 5 Live and welcome you to BBC Radio Ulster. Hello, welcome. It's Good Morning Ulster with Chris Buckler and Sarah Brett.
Good morning. Today's top stories. The return of more pupils to schools is expected to dominate discussions at today's executive meeting. The Education Minister, Peter Weir, has said he wants all primary school children back before Easter and all other pupils in school straight after the break. This morning, we're going to hear from Maeve, an 18-year-old who attends a special school here.
It is bad. I am bored. I miss seeing friends. I hate lockdown. I am lonely.
So how have young people like Maeve been affected, and when is she likely to return to school full time? We'll be talking to her mum after eight. Yesterday on the programme we talked about a potential road or rail link between Scotland and Northern Ireland. Well, a new report has recommended an official feasibility study to assess that. Infrastructure Minister Nicola Mallon told us that the plans were aimed at undermining devolution.
All of this is about London being able to impose its decisions, determine its priorities for the people of Northern Ireland, and it's about undermining devolution.
Well, Nicola Mallon is now saying that a Whitehall department is planning to set up an office in Belfast. Does she see this as another power grab by Westminster? We'll hear from her after half eight.
Also coming up on the programme, Rangers fans are still...
How much is... She's been doing 2 days of school, Marion, hasn't she, and instead of her usual week. And how has that been for you, and how has it impacted her? I mean, it was desperately sad to hear her say she feels lonely.
Yes, very, very lonely. And, I mean, the social side of our young people, you know, again, they don't have, you know, the circle of friends that most young people age 18 have. So, you know, Maeve has services, for example, you know, Cedar Autonomy, May Murray, and they have been providing friendship, you know, over Zoom for Maeve and for all of the young people like her. But missing school and the whole social element of school, where she goes in every day, she has specialist teachers, she has her therapy, she has all of her friends around her. She has class assistants. You know, it's a really amazing mix of social, educational, therapy, everything in one go.
On Newland Today, the Education Minister, Peter Weir, on this programme this morning. It is clear he is challenging his own chief medical officer as to how children will be back elsewhere in the UK, and yet it is not yet decided here.
Every child in England, Scotland, Wales and the Republic of Ireland at primary school level, all of them will be back. The question is, why is it therefore not safe, particularly in Northern Ireland, for those same children in P4 to P7 to be back?
It seems Michael McBride, the chief medical officer, will hold key cards this morning when the executive meets him, because Peter Weir says ultimately the executive will back McBride.
Frankly, I think the situation
is now making the news headlines. The big question is, when will all of our children be back in school? And that's the big dilemma to be battled out within the executive when they meet with the chief medical officer later on today. That's what makes this Peter Weir interview from last night really, really interesting. A heads up then from how our education minister, Peter Weir, is thinking. Speaking on Top Table last night, he was asked if he has the support of the chief medical officer now that he, as the education minister, has declared all school children everywhere should be back after Easter.
So you have laid down a paper for all children, primary school children, to go back to school before Easter, and all secondary school children to return to school after Easter. Do you have the support of the chief medical officer?
I don't speak on behalf of the chief medical officer, but I think it is important. I think if we look at
Have you spoken to him?
Well, there's been dialogue back and forth. Look, I'm not going to, Stephen, with respect on that, I'm not going to detail private conversations that take place.
Minister, it's not surely a private matter for us, the public, to know whether our public chief medical officer supports you wanting to bring all the children back to school.
The chief medical officer and others have raised a range of mitigations that they want to see in place in terms of schools, and I think those are something to be complied with.
Good morning from the Conor Phillips Show. Lovely to have you amongst me already this morning, the 11th of March.
Previously on the Conor Phillips Show. chippies all around the country. You can go in and they'll tell you a meat roll, and if you get it, it's a burger.
Would you stop it with the meat roll? Jeez, you love this meat roll, hey?
The ice cream is ice cream sits in a poke. It's a conical wafer.
Is it the wafer? Yes.
I'm just running in because I heard the clip for Shakespeare played, and it was.
Is that you?
I didn't know what the spice bag was.
This is amazing.
All my ears, spice bag. Call me Spice Girl at work time.
I left work yesterday, just craving food. Craving food. You were absolutely terrific on the show yesterday. Anybody who called in or texted in or emailed in, what a laugh we had. But I'm very conscious that's not a lot of you. That's not everybody. And I'm very conscious there's many people listening at the moment who've never listened before. Hello, how are you? Welcome, I'm Connor Phillips. This is The Connor Phillips Show. We're now going across BBC Radio Ulster, BBC Radio Foyle, also on the BBC Sounds app as well. And we take 90 minutes every day just to kind of pack up your troubles. Stick them in a suitcase for the next 90 minutes before we even go near them. Mama's everywhere. Ellie from Lurgan. Ellie, good morning to you. How are you? How are you? You all right?
Good morning, Connor.
Ellie, this is an interesting conversation with everyone. Is your mother still with us, Ellie?
No, she's not.
Okay,
she's not.
Does this mean you can say whatever you want about her now?
Yes, and get away with it.
What was her name, Ellie?
Dolores.
Dolores, thinking about you. Thank you for all the lovely years, Dolores, if you're looking down on us. Is she looking up, Ellie?
Well, there's a point there. She never let me away with much.
Right. So we're asking about times your ma gave off to you and maybe the best advice your ma gave to you as well. First of all, was there anything your mum would give off to you about, or is there any particular moment?
Yes. We were standing in the town one day and I seen a teacher that her and I didn't see eye to eye, and my mum stopped in front of her and started to talk to her. She knew her, and I was basically looking all over the place and just turned around and said, "Would you stand up straight? You're 55.
We want to talk now about how we can change things for women and for all of us across our society, the kind of things that need to change in order to make a difference. What do you think needs to change?
I think we need to look at it in a different way. So, you know, you've just been talking quite rightly about the problem of victim blaming. So when things like this happens, there's immediately, lots of questions for women. So why was a woman behaving in a certain way? Why do women behave like this? Why do they do that when they know it might be dangerous? The questions we don't ask very often are, why did that man behave like that? Why did he think it was okay to assault women? Has he done it before? Does he feel that there is anything to stop him doing it? And I think that gets to the root of the problem, so that too much of this behavior is actually seen as, oh, well, it's kind of inevitable. It's what men do. And that sends a message that there's nothing much we can do about it. It's inevitable. And then the fact that there are so few prosecutions, one of your guests was just talking about the rape conviction rate in Northern Ireland.
James Aloysius Alphonsus Buxley. He's some boy. He's some singer. Isn't that right, boy? He is. Now, say hello here. And hello to Hugo and Mary Mac and to Joanne and all the Belfast team again. And keep up the good work from Paddy again in Ballyclare. Paddy, how you doing? And here's one here now. I have to do it after 1:45. So it's 1:47 now. So here we go. Happy 70th birthday to Barbara in Banbridge. And just a wee message to say how much you mean to us all. Lots of love from your husband, Bertie. Barbara Bertie loves you, B&B. Aye. Barbara Bertie loves you. And sons Niall and Paul and all the families, they love you big time. And Barbara and Bertie were great fans of the late Big Tom. And many's the time they went down and they were down at all the shows in the front row there. And they danced away as well to all the dances. You see, Big Tom had a great, great following there. And hello to B&B, that is...
17 minutes past three. It's Thursday, the 11th of March. Thanks very much for your company today. You're listening to the Lynette Fay Show, live until four. And the 1 year anniversary of the first lockdown approaches. And it's time to take a moment and look at the pressure the last year has brought to family life. Have you found yourself constantly saying no to every request from your children? I spoke to the hosts of one of the UK's most popular parenting podcasts, The Scummy Mummies, and they began by telling me about Yes Day, a day where you say yes to all your children's requests. And I wondered, is that ever a good idea?
We're here to say yes, it is, Lynette. Absolutely. We had a little trial of Yes Day last weekend with our sons. We both got 9-year-olds. And do you know what? It was okay. Nothing caught on fire and none of us was sick from eating too much sugar. I think that's a win, personally.
So what was the weirdest request that your children made to you on that day?
Well, we let them choose our outfits for the day. And my son made me wear his Manchester City football kit. I don't even support Man City, by the way. And Helen, you got to wear a Pirates outfit, didn't you?
Yes, I did, which was a little bit tight. But I thought I looked quite good as a pirate, a bit sexy. I had my eye patch. The parrot was a bit too much, but, you know, it was really
fun. You got
fun.
Quite into the rum, though, didn't you? You enjoyed that aspect.
Absolutely. Really too.
It's coming up to 5:30. Now, Joel, we have been chatting today about whether we're Zoomed out. We know you are, but Absolutely. What about other people?
Yeah, I've had enough Zoom to last me a lifetime. It's something that's become the norm, of course, for so many of us over the course of the last year. We're getting the thoughts from some others. I'm trying to decide if I'm actually representing the people when it comes to speaking about Zoom or if I find myself in a very small minority. So it's not very scientific, by the way, but we've heard both sides of the argument already in the programme. We're going to hear more. Christina Sevdali, she's a lecturer at Ulster University, and she, like so many other people, has been working online for the past year.
My name is Dr. Christina Sevdali, and I'm a linguist at Ulster University. Our teaching has gone online, our meetings have gone online. In the beginning, there was, of course, a bit of a novelty factor, right? We were wearing pajamas underneath our tops. We were not going anywhere for our meetings. But now I think everybody is definitely fed up. We want to come back to normality. We want to go back to seeing people in person. And I think all of us at the university are going to be so happy the day we're going to get to go back, teach our students face to face once again without having to look at another screen. Well, until the next email, right?
The phrase of 2020, you're on mute.
You're listening to Evening Extra. Hopefully you can hear us with Mark and Joel. It's just after 5:30 on Thursday evening. Let's get the news now with Anne-Marie. Thanks very much indeed, Anne-Marie. Lots of European football on tonight, and football fans, sports fans in general, may remember this night a year ago. There were crowds. Liverpool and Atletico Madrid were preparing to head to Anfield for what would be a compelling Champions League game. But of course, as we all remember, it came against a backdrop of rising COVID cases across Europe, and another Champions League game in Spain that same night was played behind closed doors. Meanwhile, a Premier League game between Arsenal and Manchester City was postponed as several players went into isolation, this time exactly a year ago.
At Anfield, though, and indeed at Cheltenham that week, it was business as usual. It was, however, the last major football match to be played in England in front of a packed crowd. The situation deteriorated quickly, of course, and supporters haven't filled Anfield or any other big stadium since. So what do those who attended the game think 12 months on, and how do they reflect on that night and subsequent events?
Craig Hannon, originally from Northern Ireland, now in Liverpool, was there. Good evening, Craig.
Hiya.
You're from the Anfield Rap podcast. When you were there this night last year, were you thinking, it just doesn't feel quite right?
It felt strange. It was the only thing that was being discussed in the pubs beforehand, and even the idea of us all being squashed into a pub beforehand feels strange to talk about now. But You know, that was the worry amongst people, and you know, we knew that the all around Europe football matches were being postponed, they were being put behind closed doors, and we also knew that there was a lockdown impending in Spain. So yes, certainly the idea of 3,000 Spanish fans coming over from Madrid, being in the city around the bars, and sharing these sort of tight spaces with Liverpool fans was definitely a concern at the time.
And were you doing any social distancing at the time? Can you remember?
We were outside having drinks, but even then, like, you know, social distancing and all of these terms that we use now, back then they weren't things that we really completely understood. At the time, there was a prime minister talking about how he was shaking hands of people on a COVID ward, and there were.
On 92 to 95 FM and 1341 medium wave. This is BBC Radio Ulster.
BBC News at 6 o'clock. I'm Anne-Marie Foster. Pupils in preschools, nurseries and primaries 1 to 3 will now stay at school and not return to remote learning before the Easter break, the executive has announced. A decision on other year groups' return to face-to-face learning will be taken next week. The Education Minister, Peter Weir, said today's decision was only one step forward.
As with the announcements we've made a couple of weeks ago, we've taken a step forward, but this journey will only be completed once every pupil is back at school. There will be further discussions then on Tuesday, both in terms of the remainder of those school years that have not been confirmed in terms of their timing as yet, but also, I suppose, we'll be looking at issues around youth service restart, around Sure Start as well.
The First Minister, Arlene Foster, said that the different rates of progress for vaccination rollouts in Northern Ireland and the Republic are concerning. The First Minister said that if Northern Ireland has higher numbers of people...
The actor and singer Louise Matthews' latest project is a truly personal one. Her uncle was killed in a road accident in the early 90s at the age of 49. He'd moved to London in the 80s to live his life as an out gay man. Not an easy time, given the spread of HIV and the associated stigma. Louise wanted to find a way to honour his memory, and after 4 years of research, the show Immaculate was born. Collaborating with Tinderbox Theatre Company director Patrick J. O'Reilly, what was a full stage show has been distilled down for an online audience into a song cycle with music by Stuart Robinson. When I spoke to Louise, she shared some memories of her late uncle.
His name was Anthony, and he was a major light in our family. Like, he was a total star. So very rarely would he have came back from London to Belfast when we were little girls growing up, my sisters and I. But when he did, it was always phenomenal. Like, there would always be this big surprise, you know. Like, I remember we all got called to my granda's house and we're all sitting going, why are we here? And then he pops his head around from the kitchen. Would you like a sausage, Dad? It's like just a huge chorus of screams, Uncle Anthony. But every time he just lights up a room, you know, he really was larger than life, larger than anything we'd ever known.
Well, he died sadly at the very early age of 49. But at what point did you decide then you wanted to find out more about his life?
When I was pregnant with my son, just before I was given birth, I said to my partner, we need to call him Anthony. His middle name needs to be Anthony. And he was like, okay, because I'd never been so certain about anything in my life. And I just didn't want his name to be forgotten, who he was, because he was a gay man. Then where was his name going to get continued on? So I wanted people to just ask questions about why my son's name, his middle name was Anthony. And hopefully that would make him live on, you know, past us, his nieces and nephews. That just opened the floodgates. And then after that, I just kept thinking about him and just kept thinking about all the holes of missing information within his life and his life in London.
Celtic Queens. An cion ar nacwal ein lesser an gra ac posu. Non-topium, darling mod gone.
Wall chef is Jerry McSpringer. In you, tamajik play common ra a tarunga. Our gade Ian you, William Yates, jershe go will she dorcha go runda, or van iriha leshna blainta anuas. A gurabi and hlos boar a huggin she da, a reish is a reish ella. William, kajayan scale.
Well, a jerry tamin ra lishin man sha, lishne blienta north. Is glohar temot.
Well, is my hen rade and cardius.
Hakalata ra jerry gurabi ma vei.
Oh, the vei.
Tonight's mixtape, Lucy Gaffney.
Hi, I'm Lucy Gaffney, and this is my mixtape. The first song I've chosen to play tonight is one that really takes me back to being a kid. Anytime I hear it, I instantly get a bit of an excited feeling that makes me want to smile, kind of gives me butterflies. I think just because when I heard it, I was just so carefree, and the 90s was such a great time for music, and I was discovering a lot of music then and in the early 2000s. And although this track was actually originally released in 1982, most people will know it from being the soundtrack on the movie Trainspotting. But when I hear it, it just makes me want to smile, and it takes me straight back to sitting in back of my dad's car on a journey somewhere, and just looking out the window and feeling kind of excited for life. And I guess that's what's so great about music from any era. It will always transport you back to that first time that you heard it. I guarantee you can't get to the chorus of this song and not want to dance or smile, or, you know, kind of just have a bit of a nostalgic feeling. So yeah, I hope you like it. It's a New Order, Temptation. Too hard to say.
You're very welcome to the programme. It's Ralph McLean Country, and a very special edition of the show for you tonight, coming to you from the music room here in my house, directly to where you are. It's wonderful to have your company this evening, because tonight we pay tribute to Kris Kristofferson, who has announced his retirement from public life. A well-deserved break for one of the true greats, I think, and what a musical legacy he's left us to savour and enjoy, and we're going to do that tonight. I threw it open to you guys on social media and through all the platforms to pick your favourite Kristofferson songs, and you've done a sterling job, I have to say. Some amazing tracks to pick for you tonight, starting with Me and Bobby McGee. So many people asking for this. Stuart Chalmers, listening in Fife, asked for this particular one. Means a lot to him as well. Orla Harris and Norman Nabney and Trevor McGee and Myra Hardy, amongst others, asking for Me and Bobby McGee. Quite a few asking for the Janis Joplin version. We'll try to squeeze it in later on. Tonight is all about Kris Kristofferson and the wonder of his song. And Norman sends a lovely email to say, me and Bobby McGee's got to be my choice. It might not be my absolute favourite Kris Kristofferson song, but the one with the best story. He says, my oldest daughter, Sarah, when she was tiny, she just hated bath time. The soap got in her eyes. It was always a big fight, says Norman. I used to sing to her. And if you think Kris Kristofferson has an unusual voice, you should hear me. He says, whenever she was upset, she would go through the tears and say, Daddy, sing me and Bobby Mickey. And that inevitably did the trick, and it's one of her earliest memories. So you can see why it means a lot to Norman. Me and Bobby McGee, or Bobby Mickey, as it's known in that particular family. So many great songs, so many game-changing songs, I think, to play for you tonight. So we're going to crack on with one that I think was probably the most requested from all your comments and all your suggestions. And this is for loads of people, for Colin Rainey, for Susie Coyle, for Jackie Neal, for Kevin Hughes, for Martin Durkin, and Stuart Reid and Matt McGinn asked for this, actually. Phil Hooley, Margot Carr, Anya McParland, Bob Bennett, and loads more. I'll squeeze more in as the evening progresses, and just read out the names, because this track was so loved by you guys when you were picking your favourite Kristofferson tunes. We're going to hear it from the great Johnny Cash, good friend of Chris. This was a big breakthrough for Kristofferson as a songwriter, to get this covered by Johnny Cash, and it is arguably the greatest Kristofferson song, I would say. So dig out your cleanest dirty shirt and enjoy Sunday Morning Coming Down. Johnny Cash version.
Well, I woke up Sunday morning with no way to hold my head.
The Late Show with Eve Blair.
on BBC Radio Ulster and BBC Radio Fife.
Good evening. The weekend is almost upon us. Welcome to your last Late Show of the week, live from the Northwest. Thanks so much for your company.
Billy Ray was a preacher's son, and when his daddy would visit, he'd come along. When they gathered around and started talking, Pass and Billy would take me a walk in. Out through the backyard we go walking. Then he look into
The Chieftains and Paolo Nutini with Hard Times Come Again No More. I do tend to slip that in every now and then, don't I? Well, Anne, thank you so much for your message this evening. You were just saying Tommy Fleming. Do you know something? That is a song that you always hear Tommy Fleming sing, but that's actually the one where they were bringing a little bit of the Gaelic and the Gaelic together with the Chieftains and Paolo Nutini. So I hope you enjoyed that one, Anne. Thank you very much for getting in touch this evening. And also to Mick on Twitter, you really enjoyed the Bridget O'Neill song. It is gorgeous, isn't it? And Patrick, you enjoyed that single as well. Lots of love for Bridget's new song this evening. So thank you very much for getting in touch. But it is that time of the evening. Time to play your final track from your Late Show album of the week this week. That's Life from Willie Nelson. Now, it's his second album, as I was telling you, paying tribute to Frank Sinatra. And it is incredible to think that, you know, he's turning 88 next month. No sign of Willie Nelson taking it easy with the feet up. He is busy as always. And incredibly as well, this album is his 81st chart entry. It's just entered the Billboard Jazz charts at number one. Fantastic. But what I love about it, I think like the last nod to Sinatra, he's not about trying to replace or reinvent the songs. He just wants to shine a bit of a light on them again. Tonight I've chosen to finish the week with Cottage for Sale.
Thanks, Eve. Well, as part of BBC Radio Ulster and BBC Radio Foyle's Mindful March season, it's time to take a minute. Tonight, Senior Ranger at Lagan Valley Regional Park, Dan Clark, on how hope can come with the changing of the seasons.
I have been fortunate enough to continue working throughout the pandemic, and just being out and about and in those beautiful surroundings has brought me happiness, and it's been great to do something positive to add to that, to help the local wildlife and to maintain and make the parks a good safe place to be. I can't believe it's been over a year. I've seen the frogs emerge from tadpoles, the swallows arrive and then line up along the telephone lines and alight again into the autumn skies. I've seen the snow come and go, and then the floods come in and smash all our fences. And then I'm sitting here with the sun on my back, smelling wild garlic and looking at the first yellow of the lesser celandines, and you can hear kids laughing and maybe just sense a bit of hope on the horizon.
You'll find more from our Mindful March season on BBC Sounds, and check out the BBC's new mental health toolkit at bbc.co.uk/headroom for sounds to help you relax.